Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For months, it's been a gathering of Native Americans and environmental protesters trying to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline. Drums, prayer circles, marches, skirmishes. Last week, police in riot gear moved in heavy on the encampments in North Dakota. There were dramatic clashes, 140 arrests. The protesters are not leaving. They say they will stay the winter if they have to. It's about culture and climate, promises, clean water, and a lot of oil. This hour on Point, the fight over the Dakota Access Pipeline. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Where is your support in this standoff? Can you picture what it's going to be like out there in teepees this winter? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. At Cannonball Ranch in North Dakota last week, police in riot gear corralled, put 140 peaceful Dakota Access Pipeline protesters, largely peaceful, under arrest. Here, the moment that they clashed, captured by a reporter embedded with the protesters from The Intercept.
We're moving peacefully,
but it got pretty wild there. Joining me now from Seattle, Washington, is Linda Mapes. She's a reporter for the Seattle Times covering the environment, Native American tribes. She was on the site of the protests in Cannonball, North Dakota, last week, and has been covering the pipeline protests since April. Linda Mapes, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us. What brought this to a head last week, Linda?
Hi, Tom. Well, what made it blow up was a week ago yesterday, members of this protest camp decided to take it a little bit further, take it directly to the company and take back land that was theirs under the Treaty of 1851 and established what they called a treaty camp directly in the path of construction.
So the construction is exactly where now, and they're waiting to do what? What's the sort of line of tension here, Linda?
So you've got a couple lines of tension. One of them is the weather. I mean, winter is going to close in quickly. Another is money and contracts. The Energy Transfer Partners Company out of Dallas, Texas, inked their contracts to start moving oil by the end of this quarter. And they did that in 2014 before oil prices started to crater. And so the pressure's on them to get this thing done by the end of the year, because otherwise those contracts expire at the first of the year, and they've said in court documents that that could effectively cancel the project because it just wouldn't pencil. So they're feeling enormous pressure to get this thing done. Winter's coming. Tribal members made their stand in a very evocative place. I mean, this is a spot that, like all of this land around there, used to be theirs, and it's directly in the path of construction. And so when the sheriff of Morton County calls in police from six states, by the way, to move them out of there by a threat of arrest and force, for them it's very bitter, and it evokes a very bitter history.
This is a 1,200-mile pipeline from the Bakken oil field in North Dakota to southern Illinois. It would carry, when completed, 570,000 barrels of oil a day. You've got the tribe there saying that this would threaten the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, saying this would threaten our water supply. Why? How?
So the company wants to do a pipeline route right underneath the Missouri River, and that is about 10 miles from the tribe's drinking water intake. And the tribe is very concerned about a leak, a rupture that could put a spill into the Missouri River and poison not only their water, but water of millions of people downstream. And it has to be noted that the original route for this pipeline actually wasn't there at all. It was to go 10 miles north of Bismarck, the capital city of North Dakota. Mm-hmm. But there were concerns about municipal wellheads there. And so the company rerouted the pipeline within a half a mile of the reservation boundary. And there is a real feeling among the tribe there of enough is enough. And if you think this thing is so safe and so great, take it somewhere else. Take it back to Bismarck, like you said.
Is it just the pipeline going under the Missouri that remains to be completed before oil would flow? Is that the last bit of the pipeline to be built?
Right. So the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers holds the last easement that the company needs to push this thing through. And yes, there's a piece of federally owned land that's right along the banks of the Missouri, and that's where they need to get this thing completed. So there's just one last easement, and the Corps holds it, and the tribe and their supporters want them to deny it. And not only that, they want a total re-rack of this environmental review that's allowed it to get this far. It has to be noted that there has been no EIS at any time, no comprehensive environmental review of this project. It was done on a fast-track piecemeal programmatic review that is a national review used actually for water crossings as if they were building a dock or something, mm-hmm. as opposed to a more than 1,000-mile pipeline through four states.
I want to be sure we understand just how last-ditch this is. So is it the case that from the Bakken oil fields to the Missouri, it's complete? And from the other side of the Missouri to southern Illinois, it's complete. And it's just this last bit that would go under the river that remains to be built, and then in goes the oil?
It's about 60% complete. And it's interesting, you know, the company was working even as these clashes were going on, as the police were moving in on the demonstrators. There were bulldozers up on the hill. And, you know, in some ways, tribal members there said, you know, this thing with the police that's going on, as desperate as it is, it's a distraction. What's really going on is the construction. Even as we're fighting this thing, the bulldozers are moving. And to them, it's poignant because it's not only the advance of the project they don't want, but they contend that that ground is full of sacred objects. It's full of rock cairns, burial sites, very important cultural sites that are being destroyed as they're even as they're standing there trying to stop it. And it's one of the reasons there's so much emotion around this. You know, it's a concern about the water. It's also a concern about their culture being destroyed by this project.
Lots of police and police gear there last week, Thursday and beyond. Burning tires put out by the protesters. Some vehicles burned. I mean, the protesters have been all over this area trying to stop the construction from going on. Here's a protester at the Dakota Access Pipeline construction site explaining what was happening as police advanced to break up the protest, captured here by an Intercept reporter embedded with the protesters.
We have people locked in the tubes up there, and we were on our way to go pray with them when they riled up all those troops that you see and then some. They're all holding batons and guns, as you can tell. They stopped us up at the top up there and started spraying and beating everybody on the front line. And that's what's happening. So now we're retreating to make sure that our people are safe.
Linda Mapes with the Seattle Times was there. She's been there for months covering this. With us right now from the Rosebud Reservation in South Dakota, not so far, and who was there last week when all this was going on, is Alex Romero. She and her husband were protesting at the Dakota Access Pipeline demonstrations last week. She's a member of the Ogallala Sioux Tribe in South Dakota. Husband's a tribal councilman there. Alex Romero, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Can you describe what you saw, what happened when the arrests were made and when the protesters were resisting last week?
Okay, what I've seen was over-militarization of the police force, and not only just the police force, but I'm sure they were private security in just plain clothes, jeans, and T-shirts, armed with guns at side, guns over their back, and with knives.
What was the confrontation like, Alex?
It was, on our part, it was a little bit frustrating because there was, you know, they used like the sound waves that the military used to clear out, and I don't think they had very much training. They used that.
It's sort of a noise cannon with very, very loud noise that you almost can't stand.
Yes, and then, you know, it caused a lot of the protesters to become ill that day and the next. And, you know, we're always gathered there in prayer. That's our goal, just to be standing in prayer and to be met with basically the U.S. Cavalry, if you might, from, you know, back in the day. That's what it felt like, you know. We felt what our ancestors felt, you know, meeting them in all these different places where we had to meet them.
A peaceful protest has been the watchword of this, but there were scuffles there last week, Alex. How did that happen?
I believe, and from what I've seen and from what other people have been there, that there's been people planted on our side that have been, you know, they target the protesters. They'll push them into the police line, or, you know, just sometimes emotions run so high, people will step forward. And when they do, you know, there's other protesters or protectors that will try to pull them back to our side. But, you know, it's the police get them, and it gets, you know, a rush. Emotions run so high. And then when you mix them with concussion grenades, beanbag launchers, you know, it's what it felt like was a war. You know, you're hearing the booming of the grenades and the sounds of shots being fired. You know, emotions run very high there.
Alex, why have you been out there all this time? Why are you personally investing in this protest?
I'm personally investing because I want a future for my children and my grandchildren. It's not just a water thing. It's a people thing. We all drink water. And also because of, you know, the tribes need to be heard from the federal standpoint. You know, we were here first. The U.S. government made treaties with us, and they have broken every single treaty promise they made with us. We just want them to uphold the promises, the contract that they signed with us, with our ancestors. And we have, you know, we have upheld our side. We've remained peaceful this whole time. We've taken every little tidbit that they've given us, you know, to try to survive out here. But
how's this going to end, Alex? How will this end?
I hope it ends with the pipeline being stopped and with the tribes being able to be consulted first before any other federal agencies on any other project that's going to happen.
You think in the end they're going to just let that pipeline sit there? No oil will ever flow through it? It's if you succeed, it's done?
Well, it might be another fight to, you know, keep it stopped, but I don't believe oil will ever flow through if it doesn't cross the Missouri River.
Alex Romero has been there at the Dakota Access Pipeline protest. He joins us today from the Rosebud Reservation in South Dakota. Alex, thank you very much for being with us. Stay safe.
Thanks for listening.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the standoff over the Dakota Access Pipeline. Native Americans, police, and protesters at the river's edge in North Dakota over oil, sacred sites, the environment. Behind us right there, the sound of Ogallala Sioux tribe arriving at the pipeline protest camps in August. Last week, it was a little less peaceful. Here's the sound of protesters as law enforcement moves in to make them disperse their camps there. In this clip, you can hear officers telling protesters to move before spraying them with what is reported as pepper spray.
You have to get off the pickup and move to the side.
Their families get hurt and they fought for the right.
It got rough last week. 140 plus arrests after protesters blocked a bridge. Fires started there. Here's Lieutenant Tom Iverson of the North Dakota Highway Patrol talking to the media on Thursday.
They were disobeying commands. Many of the protesters would get right in the faces of the officers and say nasty things to them.
Nasty things. It got rough out there here at Cannonball Ranch in North Dakota on Thursday, also at the Frontline Camp. This is Dallas Goldtooth, the protester, talking with reporters during the six-hour standoff on that day between police and protesters.
The question I ask is, what lengths is North Dakota willing to go to defend a multi-billion dollar oil corporation?
You can join us this hour. Have you been watching this since the spring when the first tents went up, when Native Americans and others began to gather here against the Dakota Access Pipeline? What do you see on the line here? Where do you see, where do you come down on the pipeline itself, and why, and how much should resource needs and corporate investment and the Army Corps of Engineers rule the outcome here? How much should Native American sacred sites and environmental concerns rule the outcome here? We're going to speak in a moment with Congressman Kevin Cramer, represents North Dakota in Washington. He says the pipeline should go through. But first, Nick Rio joins us. He's Assistant Professor of Native American and Environmental Studies at Dartmouth College, with us today from Hanover, New Hampshire. Nick Rio, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And with us today, Gusty Turkelson, member of the Ogallala Sioux tribe in South Dakota. She was one of the first folks out there to pitch tents for the protest camps. We talked with her sister, Alex, a minute ago. She was out there for months, is back at Dartmouth College now studying natural science. Gusty Turkelson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Can you give us a sense of what it's been like over the months there? What we saw last week, which was a pretty rough outburst of confrontation, has that been the norm? Was that a rare day? What's the day in, day out been in the protest camps and on the scene, Gusty?
You know, ever since it first started, obviously tensions have been building up, and I guess, like,
yes,
you know, everything was, tensions were really high. You know, that's how it was when I first got out there, but the military weren't in riot gear. They didn't have guns pointed at us. They didn't have snipers on the hill. So, like, I believe, you know, there's a lot of tensions. People are digging in for, you know, the long haul. And it's just been so emotional to, like, see everything grow, especially since I've been out there and me being away from home. It's kind of hard to be in two places.
Yeah. Away from home at college now. You say military. The reports I'm reading were police brought in from six states. Literally military, or just perhaps do you address that way?
We address them that way just because, you know, they brought out the armored Humvees. They brought out, like, people in, like, black SWAT gear with the, like, helmets with the plastic over the faces and, like, large canisters of pepper spray that look like fire extinguishers, so...
Look, big time to you. Professor Rio, what do you see unfolding here? Is this first and foremost about water safety for the Standing Rock tribe? Is it about sacred sites? Is it about larger environmental issues?
You know, the main way that I see this as a Sioux Nation effort to care for the Missouri River, which they consider to be a living relative of theirs. So they regard the river as a living ancestor. And for thousands of years, they've had their different ways of, specific ways of caring for that ancestor and that river. And I think this is just a continuation of that track record of stewardship. And it's involving helpers and allies from a wide range of other indigenous nations and from outside Indian country. But it boils down to basically Sioux Nation doing whatever they can to care for this river.
Why do you think this standoff has attracted so much support from across the country, many Indian nations represented there, and for that matter, from around the world? Why this one, Professor Rio?
That's a really good question. I think that, you know, part of it could have to do with timing. It's a very politically charged moment in U.S. history. It could be because... this comes on the heels of a couple of successful efforts by indigenous groups to hold off large oil and gas developments, one in Washington State, and then, of course, Keystone XL. And so those could be reasons why it's garnering more attention in the media.
Do they have a legal leg to stand on? They're putting their bodies and their time on the line here, but what about the law as it stands?
You know, that's not really my particular expertise, so I probably shouldn't try to project on their legal standing. But what I will say is that they have moral ground to stand on. I really do see this as a moral issue and a human rights issue. Everyone should have the right to clean, safe drinking water, and arguably, everyone should have the right to live in a healthy environment. So from that perspective, I really do see this as a human rights issue, a moral issue, and they do have a lot of moral ground to stand on here.
Nick Rayo, Gusty Turkelson, please stand by there. Congressman Kevin Kramer joins us in a moment from North Dakota. Lots of callers who want to get in here as well. Let me go to a couple. Heather in Winona, Minnesota. Thank you for calling, Heather. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Hi. Say, stand your ground. Fight for it every way you can. Riot gear, classic American military. No, we don't need it. We don't need oil in our water. It happens every time. Look at Exxon or the one Exxon pipeline that burst and how many people were killed and how much was dropped in the oceans. Just forget it. Stand your ground.
Stand your ground and don't let it go. Heather, I appreciate your call. One more right here. Thaddeus in Rumford, Maine. Thaddeus, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. How are you today?
I'm okay. What do you see?
Okay, well, I actually have a ton of sympathy and empathy for all of those people that are out there, especially the protesters. But I actually have some sympathy for the law enforcement, who I think a lot of them are probably very sympathetic in a very tough position, having to enforce a position that they don't probably believe in. But that's not the point of my call.
Yeah.
The point of my call is that I think all of this sort of thing, whether it's a pipeline or it's a chemical used in doing piping and plumbing work in places like Flint and the types of materials and chemicals being used,
yep.
I think fundamentally the core issue here, as insensitive as this might seem to the actual top point or case of the conversation with the protesters, is that we have a procedural problem in this country where we allow corporations and companies to use volatile chemicals to do projects that can run toxic and caustic chemicals under our waterways. And then we have to prove reactively that those things are bad for us or causing damage for us to hold those companies liable. Those companies do not have to proactively in advance prove the safety and or inherent risk attached to those projects.
Thaddeus, man, I get it. I get your point. What about the consumers in Southern Illinois and beyond who, I guess, want and need that oil?
Well, I say then just read the Constitution. Life comes before liberty or the pursuit of happiness. And when you do a project that inherently risks the fundamental source of all life on Earth, which is water, then you put your liberty and your pursuit of happiness before the life of the people, not the corporation's pursuit of happiness and profit and margin. And when that becomes the conversation, it becomes obvious that it's a false choice.
That is, we've got it. We've got it, and I appreciate your call very much there from Rumford, Maine. Nick Rayo, Gusti Turkelson, please stand by. From North Dakota right now, Representative Kevin Kramer joins us. He is the congressman representing all of North Dakota. Environmental policy advisor as well to Donald Trump, serves on the House Committee on Energy and Commerce. Congressman Kramer, welcome back to On Point. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. It's good to be with you.
You've seen just how much energy has gone into opposing this pipeline, the Dakota Access Pipeline. What do you make of the standoff, and what's at stake here?
Well, what's at stake is a legally, and I want to stress this, Tom, because I appreciate some of your listeners and your guests who have sympathy for protesters, and I do as well. And one of the things that grieves me is that the legitimate questions of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe regarding the proximity of the pipeline, near, and I stress near, not on tribal land, near tribal land, could, it has some possible ramifications.
But the river flows downstream to their land, right?
And it should be also noted, by the way, there are a minimum of at least 8 other fossil fuel pipelines that go under the Missouri River north of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, including one right where this one's going, proposed to go, and that's why this route was chosen. And the previous reporter was in error when she said that this is not the original route. This is the original route. This is the preferred route. The other route she was referring to was the alternative route. And I might add also, I do know a little bit about this. I spent 10 years as an energy regulator. I cited the original Keystone Pipeline. I know a lot about avoidance and exclusion areas in the law.
Yeah.
This is a legally permitted pipeline. And obviously all these sympathetic people on your show don't drive cars or heat their homes. But it's important to understand that the consultation process, and I think this is what's really, I think, critical here, and I think Professor Rios could probably be helpful here. The consultation process with regard to the sovereign nations and the federal government and state governments, I think, is a worthwhile discussion and a good prospective thing to be talking about. The problem here is that a permit was issued and then retracted after a D.C. Circuit Court judge denied an injunction by the tribe on trying to stop this pipeline from going under the Missouri River, 100 feet under it, I might add, well below the bedrock. But at the end of all of that, there's a reasonable discussion to be had, but to retroactively apply prospective ideas is unfair to the landowners. It's unfair to the pipeline companies. Unfair to the workers out in the Bakken. It just doesn't make any sense.
Congressman Kramer, stand by. Linda Mapes with the Seattle Times. You're there. You've been covering this. The issue of consultation and how that went has been very much on the table here. I mean, the congressman says, look, it's legally permitted. We've had this conversation. It's not fair to get up in arms now.
Right. Well, there is a permit. It's not actually a permit. It's an easement that's not yet been granted. And that's still in, it's actually in abeyance. I mean, we don't know what the Corps is going to do with that. The Corps has also said they're going to consider whether to reconsider some of the permits that they have granted already. We'll see what decision they make on that point. So those are two big undecideds at this point that are still on the table. And consultation, you're absolutely right. That's at the heart of the matter here. The tribe has said over and over again that they were not adequately consulted. And the key word here is adequately. I mean, the Corps of Engineers in their environmental assessment counts up many, many different points of contact with different entities and agencies. And what the tribe says is, well, you know, it's not just a matter of math. How many emails did you send? How many calls did you make? Were they answered? Weren't they? It's about who were we allowed to bring forward to assess the damage to our sacred sites, potentially, if this thing goes through. And they have time and again tried to have their preferred archaeological consultants on the ground to assess what's there, to say what's there, mm-hmm. that really only they can say is there, because they know how to read that ground in a way that no one else can. And even as recently as last week, there was a walk around some of this contested ground, and the person they wanted to be there could not be there. I do believe Congressman Kramer was, but the consultant that they wanted to be there was not. And so there's been a time and again sense by the tribe that from the beginning of this thing, they have not been able to have the say that they want to say in this project.
I want to look more at that. First, lots of callers here. Eric in Madison, Wisconsin. Eric, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I spent about 3 years out in the Bakken, you've never seen destruction in your life.
What were you doing out there, Eric? What were you doing?
Hauling crude oil.
Okay.
You know, from the wells to the they call them lacs. They're basically the lac is an abbreviation for a spot where it pumps it into the pipeline.
Right. So you were a trucker. What did you see? When you say destruction, what do you mean?
Oh, just, I could explain it, but you wouldn't believe it. Just destruction. I mean, just complete destruction. Put a half a million people in the upper northwest corner of North Dakota, or more, million people, and trucks and bulldozers and just pulling oil, you know, and they had open pits where they dumped the salt water into the open pits before they, well, it was just crazy. Oil pumping out of the wells into the seals were bad. The wind is blowing. It's down by the lake, and the oil would be squirting up through where it pumps out of the ground and blowing into the air. And,
so, Eric, you know how many people drive? I mean, you drive a truck that depends probably on oil and many people on gas. What do you take away from it? Are the protesters right? Just forget it?
They're right. They destroyed it. There's a few certain people that made an enormous amount of money. And the other people, working guys like myself out there with just unbelievable conditions, and these big corporate oil, the oil cartel was out there, and if you opposed anything or made any controversy about anything, man, you were just blackballed. You were out of there. It was just a few certain people that made an enormous amount of wealth, and they just destroyed that upper northwest corner of North Dakota.
Eric, we've got it. Gusty Turkelson, you were there. You've been there a lot. Do you think there's a real chance that this pipeline will never flow with oil? Or is this quixotic in the end?
You know, I'd like to believe that this pipeline will, you know, never go through. I'd like to believe that, you know, our water will continue to stay clean, especially for future generations, for my nieces and nephews. And you know, it is possible. The Keystone Pipeline, you know, the tribes in South Dakota and North Dakota have fought that for 8 years, and just recently it was nullified, you know. And you know, I just really like to believe that, and I really hope for that, and that's what we're praying for every day.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Goldman Sachs. Get insights from some of the world's leading thinkers on markets, industries, and the global economy in the firm's podcast, Exchanges at Goldman Sachs. You'll hear discussions on topics with far-reaching implications like climate change, autonomous driving, the future of China's economic growth, plus much more. That's Exchanges at Goldman Sachs, available on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play, and at gs.com/podcast.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the standoff over the Dakota Access Pipeline. Sound here from Saturday of jingle dress dancers, females, dancing on the front lines of the protests that got pretty rough last week. Gusty Turkelson has been out there for months. Now she's back at Dartmouth College in New Hampshire. Joins us today from there. Nick Rios, assistant professor there at Dartmouth as well, looks at Native American environmental studies. Representative Kevin Kramer represents all of North Dakota, and he's with us as well, Republican environmental policy advisor for Donald Trump. Here's a group of activists protesting the pipeline in September. This is a video captured by Democracy Now! Linda Mapes is with us as well from Seattle Times. The Seattle Times, she's covered a lot of this. She talked with Standing Rock Sioux Tribal Councilman Dana Yellowfat last week, and here he was explaining what happened to him on the front lines of the Dakota Access Pipeline protest.
I was up at the front line trying to keep our people under control, keep our people level-headed, and the police maced me. I used pepper spray on me, hit me in the face, hit me in the neck.
Some camps cleared out there last week, but there are more, and the protesters say they are not leaving. They will stay through the winter, which, of course, in North Dakota can be a pretty, pretty serious environment. Lots of callers for all of you here. Nashville, Tennessee, Roland is calling. Roland, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Tom. I am pulling my hair out here in Nashville. I am just so angry. This is so obviously a difference between right and wrong. This is the crisis of our time. You know, this is a corporate power connected with the government going against the people, against the environment, against our future. We burn this, all of this oil that they're pumping out. I understand that these millionaires and billionaires have money. They have borrowed money on these plans. And their business model is really in crisis. I understand that. But their business model is not at all important compared to our grandchildren's ability to breathe and drink clear water. And if there's five pipelines across that river already, there should be all of those investors, there should be a bond on each one of them with enough money to give everyone fresh water if one of those things blows. They tell us that these pipes are modern and that they won't break, but we know 17 breaks right now of these pipes. So, you know, these people should have to put up their money and bet on their own bet.
Roland, do you drive a car? And if you do, does that make you partly responsible for the demand for this oil?
It certainly does. It certainly does make me partial, and I do feel that. And I advocate everybody put up ride share plans. You know, it's so much better to ride somebody with somebody else. It's like our front porch. We can have a conversation riding along, listen to the radio. But let's stop all these individual rides. Let's figure out how to combine our stuff. Everybody go shopping.
Roland, we've got it. Professor Rayo, you're listening in New Hampshire. I mean, you know the demand for petrochemicals in this country, for oil, for fuel. They want it in Southern Illinois and to send it on from there. Now, everybody says, or, you know, you look at climate change and look down the road, we can't keep this up forever, probably, without really doing serious damage to the environment. But right now, the demand's out there. I'm sure the pipeline company would say, look, we're just giving the people and the business what it wants and needs. What do you say to that, Nick?
Well, you know, I'd have to agree with the caller, Thaddeus, who said that, you know, it's a false choice to make us decide between energy security or whether we drive our cars. and environmental safety, environmental health. It's really a false choice. We're at a moment in time where oil and gas companies are trying to figure out new ways of squeezing every last drop of oil out of the earth. And in order to do that, it's causing a lot of destruction that we've never seen before. And so I think that the investment of our time and energy and intellectual resources needs to be put into figuring out cleaner ways, new ways of powering cars, of heating homes. And that's, I think that needs to really be the focus of the discussion.
What about Congressman Cramer? He says, look, there's 8 other pipelines crossing the river already. This crossing would be 100 feet below the riverbed. The suggestion there is that that's deep enough that that everything's fine. Nick?
Well, you know, I think that the fact that there's other pipelines in place isn't a rationale to build more, first of all. And, you know, once these pipelines are put in, once it's in, it's hard to undo it, and they're oftentimes not well cared for. So where I'm from in Michigan, in an important area to my home tribal community in the Straits of Mackinac, there's a very old and aging pipeline running under, you know, right next to sacred sites and important waters. And, you know, that is an out-of-date pipeline that nobody wants to fix. And so now we're faced with energy companies that, you know, say it's in good shape, even though it's outlived its life and it's been there longer than they said it would be before being replaced. So once this pipeline goes in that they're proposing, if this happens, then it'll be there until it breaks is what I see.
Kevin, Congressman Cramer, you're hearing from some of our callers and guests, pretty stern criticism of this and adamant, you know, objection to it. They just don't want to see it happen.
And almost none of them know what they're talking about because they've not been there. I mean, Eric worked there for 3 years getting a good paycheck. I imagine the lowest he made was $80,000 a year as a truck driver.
You're talking about our trucker from Wisconsin. Yeah.
Wisconsin. Yeah. Right. And he claimed there are 1 million people in Northwest North Dakota. There have never been 1 million people in the whole state of North Dakota. And I want to correct something, too. The reporter said there was not a permit. There was a permit. The permit was issued. I've seen it. I've held it. You can look at it. But the
easement for the last bit remains.
Yeah, the last easement for the surface of the land to do the work.
Yeah.
The permit to go under has been done. Now, the reality is that, by the way, these protesters, there's no question there are a lot of peaceful protesters, and most of them are from North Dakota, and we love them all. But the only shots that have been fired have been fired at the police. The only damage that's been done has been done to dozens of cattle that have been killed and slaughtered and eaten right there at the campsites. We've seen cops charged by horses with machetes. We've seen people's homes vandalized. And by the way, these protesters were removed from private land. In other words, they've been trespassing for months. I mean, at some point, you do have to enforce the law of the land for the safety, not just of the workers on the pipeline.
I mean, you describe it as a kind of attack. What I've seen by and large, though, has been more in the drumming and prayer circle road than, horseback mounted machete wielders. Really? And the gunshot, was that confirmed?
Well, of course it was. I know none of the national media want to report that.
No, I've seen it. I've seen it. We reported it on this show, but I've also seen it contested, and I just don't know where that stands at this point.
Sure.
What do you mean, sure? That's an honest uncertainty on my part.
Whether you're going to trust law enforcement or not, I suppose, but I trust law enforcement. I have been out there. The reporter was right. I did do the walk around with, by the way, the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer from Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, as well as the Historic Preservation Officer from Cheyenne River Tribe. And when we looked at all the grounds, and I went out there to satisfy my own curiosity and look at the sites that were under some argument. And by the way, I was out there with 2 archaeologists from the State Historic Preservation Officer, as well as a lawyer from the Corps of Engineers. And there are some interesting sites. And I think Dr. Real it'd be interesting. You'd probably enjoy seeing the various rock formations and whatnot, because I do think, from a spiritual standpoint, if you don't share that spirituality, you don't always have the same understanding of the significance of a formation, and that was very interesting to me. But they're all outside of the work corridor, and this route in North Dakota was changed 91 times various places as a result of consultation with tribes, 55 different tribes that identified various areas. But this particular corridor goes right on top of an existing corridor, and again, to correct the reporter, that did have a complete EIS, that's Environmental Impact Statement, 30 years ago. So anything on the surface would have been, if there was anything, would have been discovered, and a pipeline has been in the ground for 30 years at that spot. So there's so much misinformation that I'm listening to just on this show that it's no wonder that people have a different view. But that's not to say that there aren't legitimate concerns. And what bothers me as much as anything is that the legitimate concerns, at least questions, of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe about the proximity again to their water intake,
yes,
71 miles down the river, I might add, are diluted by these other keep it in the ground movements, and this is why a D.C. Circuit judge ruled with a 58 and opined thoroughly, I might add, that the court exceeded its National Historic Preservation obligations at many of the sites, and that they did reach out and try to consult with the tribes on multiple occasions. And this isn't just standard stuff, by the way. We're not talking about just sending an email. We're talking about reaching out and talking to tribal leaders, and they've even had several meetings with them.
Though those leaders clearly don't feel satisfied, I guess, at this point.
Right.
Tom, in Syracuse, New York.
Consultation with consent. Consultation is not consent. And I think Professor Rio can perhaps speak to that. There is some discussion about what is consent versus consultation and what's its role in treaties and other. And those are good discussions to have, I think, going forward.
Well, those are questions with a long, long American history. Well, I'll turn to that. Tom in Syracuse, New York. Thank you for calling, Tom. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, so I just wanted to point out, you know, we were talking about some of the violence and the characterization of the protests. And I just find it interesting the kind of double standard that is at play here, because we have protests that have largely, by and large, been peaceful, and yet not too long ago we were dealing with protests, so-called protests, at the wildlife sanctuary in Oregon, where we had an armed militia taking over federal property, and yet all of those individuals were acquitted, and despite the presence of just obvious intent and a dangerous situation. And yet here, where we have a by and large peaceful protest, once again we have the characterization of violence and the fear. Now it's rather telling that in this situation, the United Nations and Amnesty International are actually sending in investigators to ensure that the human rights of the protesters are not being trampled upon by the police response to the protesters.
Tom, we've got it. Of course, the Bundy brothers and more. Yes, people could see put these two things side by side and think about that. Linda Mapes, you're the reporter listening here with the Seattle Times. What about the characterization of the protests themselves? Violence, peaceful, horse-mounted machete wielders and gunfire or something else? Describe what you've seen.
I sure didn't see any horse-mounted machete wielders. I did see tribal members on horses fleeing from police officers, some kind of law enforcement, on ATVs with a helicopter in pursuit. And, boy, that's an image that takes you back in history. And, you know, in terms of the level of response to this thing, it was intense. It was extreme. Militarization is absolutely the right word. I've talked to demonstrators who were arrested. We said once they're out of sight and in custody, they're strip searched. They're, you know, made to wait 10, 12 hours to be bonded out. I mean, it's, you know, they're numbered on their arm with a magic marker. It's been a very distressing, disturbing experience for all of them. And I think the thing that has to be remembered here is, you know, this process, it's been acknowledged by the Obama administration, needs to be looked at, that something went wrong here. You don't build a more than 1,000-mile pipeline through four states with a piecemeal, fast-track environmental assessment. There was never an environmental impact statement done of this project. And furthermore, you know, the tribe is joined in their concern by three federal agencies, the U.S. Department of Interior, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the Federal Advisory Council on Historic Preservation have all written to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Omaha District, back in the spring to say, you guys didn't do your homework. You didn't adequately consult. You didn't adequately consider risks.
How does this end, Linda? How does this end? If they don't want it to go under the river, but it's got to go under the river if it's going to get to Illinois, I guess, then how does this end?
Find another way around the lake.
Is there such a thing that how would you do that? Do you go around the world the other way? That, you know.
Well, I mean, they had another alignment originally. I mean, this, go back to that. Find another place. I mean, I think the tribal chairman's very simple answer to this is there's a peaceful answer and an enduring answer. You know, get everyone together, do the thing right, do a process that people can feel good about, that has an, you know, an outcome that everyone can live with. And that's not where we're at right now.
Nick Rio, what do you see coming here? Given winter's coming, the standoff is still there, the investment is big, the passions are high. What do you see coming, Nick?
It's really hard to say what's going to happen here in the end. But what I am certain of is that, you know, what we're calling protesters, but I really want to think of more as guardians, you know, guardians of this river, and that they're not going anywhere. So that's not going to stop. If oil starts flowing through the pipeline, folks may start to move out some, but it's you know, folks aren't going away. They care too much about this relative of theirs, this river, the Missouri.
Congressman, is this going to be built, and when, or not?
I believe it will be built. In fact, before long, the only thing left will be mooring under that river 100 feet and putting that pipeline right next to the one that exists. Actually, this one will go much lower and have the latest technology. And yes, the pipeline will be built, I believe. I believe that there'll be oil flowing through it, and I believe that the water will be as safe as it is today. And then I also believe that there'll be significant discussion about enhancing the consultation process between the governments, and I think that's appropriate.
Are you worried about worse confrontation before we get there, if that's where it goes?
No, I'm not with North Dakota. I tell you, the Standing Rock Sioux folks are fantastic citizens of our state. Over 90% of the arrests that have taken place have been from people from outside of North Dakota, and I know I'm talking to a bunch of outside of North Dakota people now. And in fact, the tribal council member that represents the area closest to the pipeline spoke out just this last weekend saying, he supports the pipeline, we support the pipeline, we're embarrassed that it's gotten to this point. We wish that all these outsiders weren't in here.
We're at a time right there. We've witnessed a lot. We pray that it works out well. Congressman Kevin Cramer of North Dakota, thank you for joining us. Linda Mapes with the Seattle Times. Nick Rio at Dartmouth College. Gusty Turkelson, who's been among the protesters for months there, from the Ogallala Sioux Tribe in South Dakota. Our thanks to you all, callers as well. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.